Welcome to Make a Baby with Hashimoto's, where we will chat all things Hashimoto's and baby making. I'm Chelsea, registered dietitian and spiritual healer. I'm also a Hashimoto's warrior and mom of one.
And I'm Morgan. I'm a registered nurse, fellow Hashimoto's warrior, and a new mom of one as well. And we're so excited to help guide you through this amazing journey. Let's make a baby. Welcome back to another episode of Make a Baby with Hashimoto's. Chelsea and I are hanging out this morning. We're going to be talking about balancing our blood sugar.
Woohoo!
That's right. I feel excited. Both of us have experienced, like, obviously we've worked with balancing our blood sugar. I know I've had a little bit of insulin resistance trouble, and like, I don't know what your experience is with that. But I know you're obviously a registered dietitian, so this is something you love to talk about and help women who struggle with uncontrolled blood sugars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I actually have PCOS, which definitely I have a lot of insulin resistance myself. But just in general, women with Hashimoto's tend to have blood sugar issues. They are very much intercorrelated between your thyroid hormones, your pancreas releasing insulin, stress, cortisol, adrenals, like it's all connected. So like significantly that it's very uncommon to see someone with hypothyroidism and Hashimoto's not have blood sugar balance issues. And it's usually just because the hormones are out of balance. It's not because like, oh, you're not eating right or anything like that. So, you know, it's important to understand what like blood sugar even is. I know before I learned what it was, I was like, oh, that's what diabetes is, or oh, that's how like it works in your body on a cellular level, or like, oh, that's what happens when I eat X, Y, and Z and why I feel so tired after, or like bloated and uncomfortable. So I think it's important to understand like the basics of blood sugar balance, but also why it's important when trying to conceive or during pregnancy or even postpartum to work on balancing your blood sugar. So we'll kind of talk about all that today and get into like what foods to eat and what we recommend to like typically. So why don't we start with the basics? Like, what is blood sugar?
Yeah. So what is blood sugar? It's called glucose. So you might see people or practitioners refer to it as either or, but it is like, it's the primary sugar that's entering our body through food that we eat. So when we're eating food or ingesting, you know, drinking, whatever it is, that food gets then turned into glucose. And that is the energy source for our body. It provides nutrients to our organs, our muscles, our nervous system. It uses that glucose basically to function. So it's super important in our bodies, especially when we're thinking about trying to conceive or we're healing or we're growing a baby. Like, you need glucose to basically live.
Literally.
So it's super important. But then there's also this other hormone called insulin. And you may have heard of this before, but it's a hormone that's secreted by our pancreas. And it's going to help get the glucose that we eat. It's going to help get that into our cells for that energy. So you ingest something, it turns that food into sugar or glucose. And then the insulin's released by our pancreas. It's paired with that glucose and it helps get that glucose into our cells so that our cells can use that as energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's like our goal is to balance. Like, that is the goal, is to make sure that we're not having two foods that are too high in sugar, right? Carbs, sugar. Because what happens is when we ingest these foods, our blood sugar goes really high. It spikes through, like, you know, you'll see it on a graph and it will go like, it will be normal, and then high. And it's like a big mountain. And then the role of insulin is to come into our cells. It's kind of like a lock and a key method, right? So like, our cells have to accept the insulin that we make. And sometimes what happens is our cells can't accept it, or our body makes so much insulin to try and cover that we just don't, our body doesn't know what to do with it.
Right.
And a lot of that is then usually diagnosed with PCOS, insulin resistance, or sometimes diabetes. So it really is like a fine line. So that's why our goal is to balance, right? We're not telling you you can't have carbs, you shouldn't have sugar. No, no, no. We're telling you that our main goal is to make sure you don't have a really high spike and then it comes crashing down really fast so that your body becomes resistant to it, or we're able to tell the signs of what's going on in your body to prevent a big crash or prevent a big spike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's a great example too. Like, I know some people refer to it as like the roller coaster when you're having those mm-hmm. big spikes and then those big crashes. And especially if you're like eating a large meal and then you're not eating for a while, or you're, you know, you're not eating at all. And then you're waiting a long time or hours throughout your day to then eat. Let's say you're skipping breakfast and you just eat lunch. That's when you're going to experience those like really low dips and those very high. I want to say like a hill, but it's almost like,
it's like a mountain.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's so interesting. I always use this example and I don't know why, but we've all been to amusement parks, right? Where you're like waiting on lines forever at Disney or wherever, and you're starving. You mm-hmm. are hangry. And then you eat and you like feel refreshed. You're like, okay, I could do this for 10 more hours. Like, let's go. And then you're like, you're just so hungry. You're on your feet all day. And that's kind of the feeling I associate with low blood sugar. Like, I can feel it. And I know that now, being more aware of my body and understanding like my PCOS and what the symptoms I was feeling, like knowing when I'm going to be low, it's so important. This is why I always have snacks on me. My friends always make fun of me when I pull like almonds out of my bag, but I'm like, I can't, it's balance. I need to make sure I'm not getting too low or else a lot of issues happen. It's not just I'm a BITCH
okay, and comes out.
Yeah, it's, but like, it's on a cellular level. Like, your pancreas is affected, your thyroid's affected, your liver's affected, your adrenals are affected. Like, it's all together. And the main thing is that we don't want these major swings. We want a steady range. So when we're going up and down and up and down and up and down, it causes a lot of stress on our body. Like, our body will eventually view that as a stress response.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that we don't want to have all of these changes and our body does not experience these major fluctuations and change. And we know that increased stress in the body can cause more damage to the thyroid, right? Yeah. This is why it's all connected. Because when the adrenals, which are the organs in our body, they live right on top of our kidneys, they mm-hmm. are responsible for releasing all of the stress hormones. So when they become stressed, they release an excess amount of cortisol to try and calm things down. But then that means our body's going into an inflammatory response because it's going almost into like fight or flight mode. And then we have an immune response. So our autoimmune system, like it kind of triggers one thing after the other. And especially when you're trying to conceive or during pregnancy, we want to be as calm as possible. Stress can do wild things to our journey. And that's not like a direct cause, right? We'll never be able to say like, oh, you're stressed. Like, let's get you down. Cause the body does, you know, subconsciously things that I'm sure we don't understand, but this pattern leads to cortisol issues typically, and lots of symptoms like chronic fatigue, your mood swings, more TPO antibodies and TG antibodies. And like, I don't know about you, but living in that chronic state, I've been there. It, you feel it. Like, you can tell like something's off. You, after you eat, you are sluggish. You are tired. You are uncomfortable. You, like, I would get the sweats after sometimes. And I'm like, this isn't right. I'm eating things that are supposed to be healthy, right? Like, I'm eating sweet potato. And like, it was just too much for my body. My body could not either make enough insulin to cover what I was eating because of my insulin resistance, or it literally could not accept the insulin I was making. Like, I didn't have the right lock and key, which can happen. Yeah. So that's why it's important. Like, if you are feeling any of these symptoms, let's get you looked at. Let's make sure we understand what's happening in your body. Cause the good thing,
blood work too. This is where blood work also comes in.
Yeah.
Blood work. This will show on your blood work.
Oh yeah. Majorly.
Yeah. So that's, you know, if you're looking at like a fasting glucose, your glucose might be elevated, or a fasting insulin levels, like your insulin levels could be elevated. Also, I think getting an A1C drawn is important too, because mm-hmm. that's obviously going to look for diabetes. So making sure that we're not pre-diabetic or diabetic. So those are kind of things that you can ask your provider for them to have those labs drawn when you're going to get your thyroid labs drawn as well. You know, if you're feeling some of these symptoms and you're going, okay, this is all checking the boxes, look into this. Let's see if any of these things are coming into play in your healing. Because it is one big domino effect.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's cascading, it's affecting everything. But there are things that you can do to kind of help with balancing your blood sugar, getting your blood sugar back under control. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you work through this and you do more blood work in 3 months, you'll see the changes. Hopefully you'll see the changes yeah. in your blood work. So we're going to kind of talk about what you can do to help balance your blood sugar with food, with exercise. Cause there's a couple of tools that we have that we'd like to talk about. And so the first thing we're going to kind of discuss is food pairing. I think we've talked about this before mm-hmm. in our previous episodes, but pairing protein with a carb. So when you're eating carbs, making sure that you're having protein, and why we want you to do this is because this is going to prevent your blood sugar from having that super high spike. You're still going to have an increase in your blood sugar, but it's going to help keep it more like, it's not going to have that giant dip. You're going to more plateau. It's going to help lower your blood sugar, kind of at a slower rate, right? Slower rate. It's going to be, mm-hmm. it's going to last a little bit longer. And what we want you to have too is a 2-to-1 ratio. So 2-to-1, the 2-to-1 is protein to carb ratio.
Yeah. So your goal is to basically how I envision it happening, right? When your food hits your stomach, your digestion has already started when the food hits your mouth. Mm-hmm. So your stomach and your cells are all waiting for this energy to come in. So when a carb hits your stomach, it eats it up really, 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 really fast. And that's the spike. All right. But it uses the energy really quick because our body needs the energy. It either stores it or it uses it just by living, breathing, digestion, everything. So when you put a protein with this carb, it slows the digestion down because proteins take a lot longer to digest than carbohydrates do. So carbs break down a lot faster than protein does. When you have both at the same time, it slows your gastric emptying. So it slows down the absorption of all these things at a steady line. So that's why we want more proteins at your meals than we do carbs. And that's why when we look at the plate, the Hashimoto's plate, the PCOS plate, really any plate, you'll see pretty much the same thing. We want half veggies, half of your plate of veggies, right? For the fiber, for the healthy carbs, for, you know, the things we love. Then we want to take the other half and split that in half too and have a protein. And then the next quarter should be your carb, one serving of whatever your carb is. But the protein portion is a little bigger, and that's on purpose. That is because we want to make sure that you're having a 2-to-1 ratio, like Morgan said. So way more protein than you are carb, or the same amount, at least minimum, the same amount of protein than your carb. So if you're measuring or you're counting macros, or just visualize it, like half a sweet potato, like a decent sized sweet potato, and then a whole breast of chicken would probably be a good mix, or even a quarter of a sweet potato if you're, you know, trying to be more cautious or you're working on balancing. And then a ton of vegetables on the side. That is a great balanced meal. But yeah, our goal is to make sure that you are basically taking in more or at least the same amount of protein than you are of your carbs during meals.
Yeah. I think that's important to note. And like you said, it can be a very visual thing. You're looking at your plate and you're just eyeballing it, or you know, if you are counting macros, that's something you can measure out and make sure that you're doing the 2-to-1 ratio that way too. So it's going to help. That's going to help balance your blood sugar, and it's going to help you kind of stay more level as the time goes on. Another thing that I know you practiced this when you were pregnant, but moving your body after you're eating, and that's why we want you to do this, is because we want that the glucose to get into our cells to work. So when you're moving your body and you're using your muscles, your body is going to be taking that glucose, putting it into your system, and hopefully putting it to work to use that energy. And I feel like I remember you doing squats. Was that right?
Yeah, I'm literally writing out sugar squats. So I remember to bring it up.
That's what it was, sugar squats. So Chelsea would eat something and then she would do, was it like 20 squats or something?
Yeah, like 10 to 20 squats.
Yeah,
and that's because your muscles in your thighs are bigger than most other muscles, meaning they need more energy. So they'll suck up more of the carbs. Now, this is not like a surefire way to be like, oh, I'll have a bowl of pasta and then I'll just do squats. Like, no, this is to help my body use it instead of just spiking and then dropping.
Yeah.
So I had gestational diabetes while I was pregnant, and sugar squats was actually something I did prior to getting pregnant when I was diagnosed with PCOS. I like did a ton of research on this because it's true, right? This is why they tell you to like carb load before you do a big run or even a pre-workout, right? They usually say this is where like a higher carb food item should be consumed. And then after your workout should be the protein, because proteins rebuild, carbs give you energy. Yeah. Right. Like if we're bringing down to major basics.
Yeah.
So if I ate something that I just felt was like a little heavier than normal, I would do 20 squats. So that way the glucose is being used up immediately instead of just staying in my blood system. And it's helpful. It has brought down my blood sugars tremendously. And I know a lot of type 1 diabetics and type 2 diabetics and PCOS sisters that do the same thing. Any movement after you're eating is going to be helpful because your body's using that energy immediately instead of having it stored or sitting. Mm-hmm. When your body goes to store excess carbohydrates, which break down into sugars, it stores them as fat in your fat cells. Yeah. So this is why the whole like no carb, low carb thing is happening, even though on a cellular level, it doesn't necessarily make sense, but you know, that's kind of why. So our goal is to use the energy on a consistent, stable basis versus having it be stored as much as possible. Yeah. So when you involve movement, it helps it be used and it helps your blood sugar kind of process things slower instead of spiking up high really fast and then dropping really fast. It's just a more consistent hill, almost like Morgan was saying, a little rounded hill. Because no matter what you eat and when you eat, your blood sugar is going to rise. Like that's normal.
Even protein has some effect to your blood sugar.
What we don't want is the big spike, basically.
Want the hill.
Yeah, no. We want the hill, the nice little hill that we can actually walk over.
It's very visual. I can like visualize it in my head. And I'm like, you want the hill.
Yes, we want the nice rounded hill. So we want the little spike. That means our body's doing exactly what it's supposed to be doing. And then we want it to be up a little bit and then fall gently, not spike up really freaking fast and then crash down. We don't want the triangle. Is basically what we're saying. But, you know, we want to keep our levels consistent for energy too. If our body is having issue with us either making too much insulin or our cells can't take the insulin in that we're making or they're resistant to it, it's just sitting in your bloodstream. Your body doesn't know what to do with it. You know, another important thing is making sure that you're keeping up with eating every few hours. You don't want to get to that hangry, like when you're at Disney parks or, you know, an amusement park and you're drained. Like we want to avoid that.
Just want some food. And yeah, so avoid that at all costs.
At all costs. Like if you know that you get hangry, have snacks, like have things in your bag, have things with you, be smart, prepare for it. I recommend usually eating at least every 3 to 4 hours, which makes sense, you know, in society. You know, it should be meal, snack, meal. And then I don't know about you, but I always have a snack at the end of the day too.
I do. My favorite snack I always have, like, I love like any type of beef stick, like chomp stick. There's a couple other brands I use, but that, and then I'll do like usually an apple or some type of like other fruit, or I'll do nuts with it. So I just try to like pair it. And I use that protein as my pairing, that beef stick as my pairing with whatever carb I'm eating for my snack.
Yeah.
It's just like a habit now.
For sure. And I feel like it's just easy. Like I'm sure a lot of us are the same in that, like, counting your carbs and protein just seems unrealistic. I don't have the time or the want to do that. So visualizing and knowing that, like, okay, this is a lot more protein than it is a carb, it just is so much easier on your body, but on your brain too. And it's helpful. But this is also where, like, having, I'm sure you've heard of low glycemic index foods. And basically, it's basically foods that don't spike your blood sugar. So they're going to be like have a lower effect on that blood sugar spike. So like the lowest would be like your green veggies, right? The spinach, the zucchini, things like that. Carrots, raw carrots specifically, because when you boil them, the sugar concentrates. Some beans, some lentils. Really like your fruits and veggies, and then whole grains, I would say, are a little higher glycemic index foods. But you know, minimally processed grains, you could do dairy, nuts, most fruits, most vegetables are usually, I don't want to call them safe, but they won't spike you as much when you have a portion combined with a protein.
Yeah. That's a great way of explaining it.
Yeah. So, right. Having 2-to-1 ratio food pairing, moving your body, lower glycemic index foods, eating every few hours. I always recommend breakfast.
Yeah. like 1 to 2 hours of waking. Mm-hmm. I know that's something when I was in high school, I like skipped breakfast, and I'm like, looking back now, no wonder why I felt like crap all the time. Yeah. Like, hello. So eating breakfast, and like, I feel like too, when you have breakfast, that's actually something of substance, not like a granola bar that I would do in high school, like having a protein, carb, and a fat, something that's going to make you feel full and is going to last a while, I think is important here too. Because you're starting your day off with more energy, more protein, something that's going to get your metabolism going, starting back up, why it's called breakfast. You're breaking that fast from the night before. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important too, to make sure that your breakfast contains protein in it. Because I think I was notorious when I was younger for not having any protein in my breakfast. Mm-hmm. And when I started doing that, like a world of difference, my energy levels were so much better.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say it's important at least within an hour. And if you have to push it, 2 hours of waking up, because your hormones are getting ready to start the day too. Your body's on a clock. So if you're not giving it energy, you won't be energetic. Like your body won't be able to do what it needs to do. And this is why it's so important that we want to get our body started. We want to give our body energy at the beginning of the day. Coffee is not breakfast. We need proteins, fats, and carbs, honestly, for a balanced plate, a balanced meal. But within 1 to 2 hours of waking up would be really ideal, especially for women, especially for Hashimoto's warriors, especially if you're trying to conceive. We don't want our body to go into the starvation mode, which it's hard to get into like a true starvation mode, but we don't want our body to kind of wreak havoc by being stressed because it doesn't have energy.
Yeah. Anything we can do to prevent it from feeling like it's stressed, which this is, I feel like something really simple that you can do is making sure that you're eating a well-balanced breakfast. Just to kind of prevent your body from freaking out and going, okay, I'm not getting any nutrients, any type of energy to start off my day. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
You can incorporate in not just breakfast, but any meal really, is fiber. And fiber is also going to help kind of prevent that blood sugar spike from happening. And things that are great, you know, like high in fiber are going to be like chia, which is like great in yogurt or smoothie or on top. Really, you can put it in anything. Flaxseed. That's another one, good one. Avocados are a great one to add into. That's like a fat, but it's also a great fiber. And then your whole grains. Those are great for fiber as well. So those are things that you can incorporate into every meal, if not, you know, at least one meal a day to kind of help with that balancing of the blood sugar.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that like, if we had to picture an ideal day of eating, it would be, I personally like a balance of protein, fats, and carbs. Some people, and this is where carb tolerance comes into play, understanding your body and how your body does with X amount of carbs. But there are some people who do better off in the mornings without carbs or a lower carb breakfast. There are some people who do better where they have a higher carb lunch. So it's a, like throughout the day, it's even. So this is where you get to read your body and kind of experiment and see what you do. But in an ideal day, I would say like a breakfast would be eggs with avocado. You can have like a slice of gluten-free toast and then tea with your ovacetol, which we'll talk about. Ovacetol is a supplement that we love. And especially if you have PCOS and or Hashimoto's, we'll talk about it in a second. We'll rave around in a second. Lunch, I would say some type of protein, grilled chicken. I personally love chicken thighs. They're my absolute favorite with mixed vegetables, and you could put taco sauce. You could do Asian flavor, whatever. And if you do better with carb, I would do some rice. I would do Japanese sweet potato, like whatever floats your boat there. Dinner could be like salmon with veggies. We were just talking about this before we started recording. Some salmon, a little bit of rice, veggies with like spicy mayo on top. And then you dip it in seaweed. That's a great balanced meal. And then some snacks, a hard boiled egg with, some crackers if you want. You could do yogurt with berries and granola. You could do a Chomps meat stick with some carrots. You could do, right? Like there's tons of great.
Tons of things that you can pair together. Yeah.
Great paired foods. But I just wanted to give you some examples of like how easy it is to actually incorporate all of these things that are filled with fiber, that are low glycemic, that will help balance your blood sugar, that like you probably eat on a regular basis anyway, but it's more the finding the balance that works for your body when it comes to carbs and protein.
Definitely. Beautiful.
Yes.
So we talked about ovacetol. So let's go back to supplements. There are supplements that we're going to name a few here in just a minute that can help you with balancing your blood sugar. And I know we mentioned ovacetol, and ovacetol is one of them. We love ovacetol, and we actually have a link for it down below. We'll link it in the show notes so that you can just go straight to it if it's something that interests you. But I'm going to just run through the ones that we have listed. We have
ovacetol. Wait, before you go. Okay. I just want to say, we are not telling you to use these supplements. Everyone is different. Work with a practitioner that understands your body, your gut health, your hormone health, everything that's going on personally individualized to you, because some of these that we're going to mention can also have a reverse effect on blood sugar if taken too much or too little, or right. We would just want to make sure that you're doing this safely. So please, please don't just go and buy all of these and take them.
Yeah.
It could cause more harm than good if you don't need them, or, you know, too much or too little. So I just wanted to put that out there as a disclaimer. Some of them are most of them are typically safe, but we just want to make sure that you understand that we're not saying you need to go out and buy all these. You do not. We just want to make sure you have all the facts and all the tips and tricks.
Yeah. These are simply just supplements that if you're working with a practitioner, they can suggest or help you if you're having blood sugar issues. So work with someone, have them be the one that's managing this with you. But to go back to it, we've got ovacetol is one of them. We've got L-glutamine, berberine, cinnamon, mint, and then also magnesium. And so some of those you may have heard of, some of them might be new to you. I know I'm not as familiar with berberine as Chelsea might be, but I'm pretty familiar with all the others. I know a lot of people like will say, if you have a meal, sprinkle a little bit of cinnamon on top to help with balancing the blood sugar. Like, I don't think that's going to hurt. If you're incorporating that into, like, you know, yogurt with granola, you can sprinkle that on top. Just to help balance your blood sugar. Or if you're drinking like mint tea, or if you're adding magnesium into your daily routine, I think doing it with safely and in moderation is kind of key here. But
yeah, I should say, like, my number one thing that I recommend, and I'm so happy I found ovacetol. What ovacetol is, it's a myo inositol and a dichiro inositol. And these are found out in the woods somewhere from a plant. And what we have found is that these two, when combined, these inositols, when combined, really help restore regularity in your menstrual cycle, improve your egg quality, help with your thyroid hormones, improve your anxiety and depression. There have just been a lot of benefits to be found when these are added with people who have hormonal imbalances. Your thyroid produces hormones. It is imbalanced if you have Hashimoto's or hyperthyroidism or hyperthyroidism. And so I know personally, taking ovacetol, majority of my clients are on ovacetol. Some of their doctors even recommend it, which it makes me so happy that this is helpful, but it has helped many of them become pregnant, including myself. And it just helps regulate everything. It's mm-hmm. also helpful with PCOS because it helps reduce cravings. So the hormones that are telling you, hey, you're hungry, go eat these sweets, go eat these high dense carb foods. Ovacetol helps lowering your appetite by helping lowering your insulin and your glucose, which we need help when you have PCOS or really any hormonal imbalance. You need help doing that. We want to make sure that our body is using the insulin effectively. And that's what inositol does. And like, I'm not just selling that. Like, I'm not just like, the only reason I would talk about it, even if we didn't have a link below, I think it is a great supplement. I take it. And like I said, majority of my clients take it, but it is just really helpful when trying to conceive, especially with Hashimoto's. It has been known to help with inflammation, lowering TPO antibodies, helping balance your thyroid hormones, as well as improving your egg quality, helping with cravings, decrease androgens if you have PCOS, and helps with your insulin. So I love this supplement. You do not need the brand Ovacetol. It is just the brand that we trust and we use. And we have a relationship with. There are tons. Just make sure that you do research into what type of myo-inositol and dichiro-inositol that you are getting from somewhere else on the internet or a store. But this has become very popular, and we have a link to help save you money below if it's something you're interested in. But it has been so, like, I take it. What I do is I do 3 months on and then I do 3 months off, and my PCOS is pretty much dormant. My insulin is normal. I don't have unnecessary androgens happening. My symptoms are pretty stabilized. And this has just been with the help of ovacetol and changing my diet, adding movement in, right? There's a lot happening here behind the scenes, but ovacetol has created huge changes for most of my clients, especially ones who are trying to conceive. Dude, I feel like I just did a commercial for them. I didn't even mean to.
It really was. Yeah.
I just really love it. Okay.
Wow. I know you love it. I know it's one of your favorite supplements. And yeah, you did a great job of explaining what it does, what it helps with, mm-hmm. And why it, you know, might be helpful to someone who's experiencing blood sugar imbalances. Yeah. So.
Yeah. I will definitely say that. Thank you. That supplements. Well, I like knowing what I'm putting in my body, right? Like, I think that's an important part of any healing journey, but especially trying to conceive. Like, I want to know what's going on around and inside my body, literally, like physically, but emotionally too. So I definitely think that supplements are helpful, but they're supplements, right? So like, yes, we're going to eat a lot of these things. You're getting a lot of this in your diet. But it can't hurt if we're low in something. This is why we say work with someone. If you're low in magnesium, or right, you're low in certain vitamins, or, you know, that can definitely not help with egg quality and hormones that we need to have a sticky baby. So
it's not going to affect any type of hormones that we need while we're trying to conceive. So
exactly. So I'm all for supplements. I don't see any harm in them. But definitely find out what you need instead of just like taking free ball in it. Yeah. Cause you don't need it all, honestly.
And it may, when you're doing it all, it might not be helpful.
Yeah.
So
for sure. I do want to say that, especially if you do have PCOS or insulin resistance in general, there's a tea, mint tea, or was it spearmint or peppermint? I'm pretty sure it's either.
Yeah, I think it's either as well. It's just mint.
Yeah, that you can have after, they say like after eating, that help kind of slow the absorption, like balance the absorption of carbs and protein to make it even more balanced. I don't know if that's a scientific fact, but I do know that studies are seeing that. I don't know if it's conclusive, but that's just a little fun thing that I do every once in a while too. If I know I'm having, like, if I'm going to like an Italian restaurant and I know I'm getting pasta, I'll always bring a mint tea bag with me. And not because I'm like being super anal about anything. I just think like, why not do things that are going to help? And like, it's casual. If I forget about it, I forget about it, whatever. I'm not going to like ruin my day because I didn't have my mint tea.
Well, I think those are all good tidbits. I feel like we just gave a lot of information on balancing blood sugar and lots of good, as far as like food ideas go. Mm-hmm. One last thing we're going to talk about, and that is sleep. Mm-hmm. And what sleep, how it affects your blood sugars. And first off, I think getting enough sleep, getting at least 8 hours of sleep every night. The reason why we want you to have at least 8 hours of sleep is because it's going to allow your body to repair itself during that time. A lot of your organs are doing a lot of its work, the repair work while you're sleeping. Specifically, I know we talked already of kind of about our adrenals, our liver, which affect our cortisol. So when we're sleeping, when we're getting enough sleep, it's going to help balance our cortisol levels. And when we have better balanced cortisol levels, obviously that's going to then help with our blood sugar levels as well.
Yeah. They say like, you know, I don't know if you remember, but like in high school, I was always told like, oh, that's why you're craving sugary foods, is because you're not sleeping. Yeah. And it's true, right? These hormones that are secreted and are helping your adrenals, your liver, your pancreas, your thyroid while you're sleeping. If you're not sleeping, they don't get to do what they're supposed to do. And that can definitely disrupt your insulin levels and your ability to absorb insulin. It can increase your appetite. It could increase, you know, your cravings, which typically we crave sugar-filled foods. Right. And this could cause those blood sugar swings. So, you know, getting enough quality sleep is so important for healing in general, for your stress, for your blood sugar. Like, you just want your body to repair and process and rest and digest, right? That's what's happening basically. So it's very important to make sleep a priority for sure on any healing journey, but especially if you're trying to conceive, and especially if you're pregnant. And postpartum, we understand it might be a little difficult, but as much as you can get, let's try.
Yeah. And this too, I think like magnesium has helped me tremendously in my sleep journey and like helping me fall asleep quicker, have better quality sleep, and just feeling better overall because I'm having those 8 hours of sleep, like having energy to do things during the day because I had a good night's rest. So, and I think that's one simple thing that you can start to like really do in your routine and change things, is just ensuring that you're going to bed whatever time it is, but at least giving yourself 8 hours to sleep and rest.
Woohoo!
Yeah. lots of tidbits in this episode. It was a good episode. I enjoyed talking about this, and I think it's super prevalent in our like Hashimoto's community. So hope you guys found this helpful. If you haven't joined our free Facebook group, please go join. It's a community where us Hashimoto's women, whether you're just dealing with Hashimoto's or you're trying to conceive or you're pregnant or you're postpartum, wherever you're at in your journey, we have a community there for you. So go join and, you know, say hello in the group. We'd love to see you there. And, you know, if you guys need anything, you can always find us on our social, Instagram, in the group, in the Facebook group. So yeah, reach out to us if you guys have any questions or need help with helping balance your blood sugar. So we'll catch you guys on the next episode.
Bye.